This is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Welcome, everybody. It's Bob, Dave, and Moore here on 710 ESPN Seattle. We've got a good show coming your way. Talk about the big move made by your Seattle Seahawks to address the defense. Carlos Dunlap is here, so we'll speak to Jeff Hobson from Bengals.com. He'll join us at 3:30. We'll get some insight on Carlos Dunlap and what was going on out there. John Clayton will join us at 4 o'clock today, and then our player spotlight will feature one of our favorites, Luke Wilson, at 5 o'clock. So make sure you stay tuned for that. But one of the guys, we were throwing around names yesterday. Obviously, Everson Griffin was off the market. He signed pretty quickly once it became public that he was available. He gets signed by the Lions. So we were talking about Clay Matthews. We were talking about Kerrigan. We were talking about Dunlap, who was obviously very vocal about his dissatisfaction with what was happening in Cincinnati. And the Seahawks said, well, I think we could find him a place out here. So he's now a member of the Seattle Seahawks. They traded a seventh-round pick in B.J. Finney, who I would not know him if he were standing here. I don't know what he looks like. He never had a presence on this team. He was thought to be their center of the future and just one of those, I guess, a swing and a miss, if you will, on a signing. So in terms of what they gave up for Dunlap, I'm at peace with it. I like the move. I don't know that he alone will change the fortunes of the team, but I think it's definitely a step in the right direction. And as I was saying yesterday, you got to go down swinging. Even if this move doesn't work out, I'm not going to go, well, John Pete, what were they thinking? This guy gave you nothing. No, they're making a move. They are attempting to improve this defense with somebody who's a proven commodity in this league.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that this, I mean, is Carlos Dunlap the kind of guy that's like a game changer like Jamal Adams that you're bringing in? Probably not, but you know, if you put the right pieces together, they're trying to find the right combination of guys to get out on the field. And, you know, and who knows if they do actually improve a little bit if they have Jamal Adams over the last couple of weeks. But what's he missed? Three games now? I think he missed the Dallas game and then Minnesota and Arizona. So, you know, maybe that will help them. But, you know, I feel like their style of defense maybe needs to change a little bit. And by the way, I mean, Dunlap's not going to be available for this week, and we'll get into it later, but San Francisco still, their offense is incredibly creative, and they execute. And, you know, their running game especially, they're going to need to be really physical. But yeah, it was interesting, Carlos Dunlap, the whole, I know I'm going to call him Carlos Hyde. Now we get two Carloses on the team. But, you know, I was looking at his play in Cincinnati this year. The first game, he was the number one D lineman, 52 snaps, 70% of the time. And then the second game, 30 snaps, only 52% of the time. And he was the third defensive lineman. And then the next week, 75, number one, 75% in game four. And then all of a sudden it dropped off to like 40, 45, 20%. So he, for whatever reason, and that, you know, they said, and we'll talk to Jeff Hobson at 3:30, but you know, they said, well, we're trying to run it like it's a merit thing here. And if you play well, you're going to get more playing time. And apparently they thought he wasn't playing well. So he's a guy that's gotten 8 sacks a year over the last 4 years. And if you go pull up his highlight film from last year, 3 of those plays that you'll see there were against the Seahawks last year. He had 2 tackles for loss and he had a sack. So
that was against the old offensive line. He couldn't do that against this line.
Yeah. Well, this offensive line's pretty good.
I know, man. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I know. Great. So it's good news there, but you know, as far as the D line and the sacks, you know, is he this huge game changer? Maybe he can be with the right combination and how they use him. I talked to Clayton earlier today, like, is he the Leo guy? I don't know. I think he's more of like a 5 technique guy, but, you know, not this quick twitch. He's a huge guy, 6'6", 285 pounds, but I just think he's a good football player. And, you know, not just against the pass, but against the run as well. So he'll help them. And then, you know, what they gave up, Finney, that just did not work out. And I wonder if that's one of those COVID casualties. Talked about this a little bit with you know, with the pass rusher.
Daryl Taylor,
mm-hmm. That, you know, that he worked a little bit too hard. And I don't know if, you know, maybe Finney wasn't working as hard. I don't know. And I'm not trashing the guy. you know, but it was peculiar to me that the way, and Pete didn't say anything, but just kind of trying to read what Pete was, the way he was describing him, it was that he just wasn't ready. So, and he's a veteran guy, so that part of it, you know, trading him away, certainly, it also, I think, puts a spotlight on the fact that Ethan Posick has been maybe the biggest surprise that we've had on this team at center, and that's an important
position. We were wondering if he was going to make the roster.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and he has stepped up, and sometimes when you give a guy a starting job and say, you're the guy and we expect you to do well, then they respond to it. And that's kind of what he kind of has, that personality, I think. So it kind of speaks to that, too, a little bit. But yeah, I mean, I think it's a good move. And really, you gave up the seventh rounder. I don't think anybody's going to miss B.J. Finney.
No, I don't think so either. And you look at B.J. Finney, and one of the worst free agent signings that Schneider's had since he's been here, based on how much he's played, as in not at all. Zero offensive snaps for Finney, and you thought when he came over here from Pittsburgh that he was either going to, you know, Posick stepped up and took the center job, and you thought, well, okay, the guy that covers the Steelers that we had on told us that Finney's better at a guard anyway, and that hasn't turned out to be the case either. So he's just completely been passed by. He's only played on special teams 20% of the time, so you're not missing anything there. And like you said, a seventh-round pick, and you get a guy in Carlos Dunlap. When you look at his numbers, his numbers are better than Bruce Irvin's the last 4 years, the last 6 years, the last 7 years. I mean, not greatly, but slightly anyway. He's averaged nearly 9 sacks the last 7 years. And so, you know, whatever you think about it, it's kind of like, okay, they made a move. Everybody's clamoring for the Seahawks have to do something. They have to do something. Well, they did something, and they didn't give up much to get somebody who can really help out, who I think is going to be as good as Bruce Irvin. I would venture to say anyway that I think he's going to lead the team in sacks. Now, that's not going out on too far of a limb here when your sack leader right now is Jamal Adams and Benson Mayoa with 2 each. And throw away the sack that he has there in Cincinnati and whatever his problems were, we'll find out more about that from Bengals.com guy Jeff Hobson at 3:30. But I like this. I think it's great. It might help Mayoa too by having another guy that can rush the passer. And some other things I was circling here about this guy. He's got 60 pass deflections in his career, which sounds like a high number to me. I love that. I mean, if you're not going to get to the quarterback, at least shut the play down. So he's got the ability to do that. And then the thing about Cliff Averill I always appreciated was forced fumbles. This guy has forced 20 fumbles in his career, and he's durable. The last 7 years, he's missed 3 games is all. So, yeah, I think it's just a win-win, and I'm glad Schneider went out and made this move. And this might have been – I mean, he might end up being better than Everson Griffin for the Seahawks. We'll find out how that plays out for the Lions, but I love the move they made today.
Well, and then, you know, I heard Jake and Tom and Stacy talking about the fact that he made kind of a stink. But does that mean sometimes you have to do that? That's what Jamal Adams did to get out of there.
What Dwayne Brown did. Yeah. That's what Jadeveon Clowney did.
All right. So, but, you know, I'll say this. This is being very, very optimistic. But if the B.J. Finney signing spurned Ethan Posick to become the player that he is. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's somebody pushing you to get better. Then it served its purpose because that was an important position that they needed with Justin Britt getting hurt last year, and you know they kind of went back and forth. Joey Hunt. So I mean, it could have served that purpose, but yeah, I think the whole thing turns out to be, you know, a wash as far as he is concerned. But, yeah, I think Carlos Dunlap's just a good football player. So, 2-time Pro Bowler as well. So, you know, and that was a few years ago, but still, it's. I think it's going to be a good, positive move.
Mike Silver was talking about this, said Schneider found value with his trade, and he might not be done yet.
John Schneider understands value, and it's certainly worth the risk. They didn't give up much. They really need a pass rusher who knows what he's doing. And if I know John Schneider, I'm not sure that he's done as the trade deadline approaches.
We'll see what they do. I mean, the trade deadline is November 3rd. That's next Tuesday. So we'll see if any other moves, maybe something more minor, but maybe addressing the same spot, helping the pass rush. Again, I think cornerback's probably a spot they could look at just based on the depth. And we're not sure what's going on with Shaq Griffin. Dunbar's got kind of a continuing injury situation. And Trey Flowers is Trey Flowers this year. So that could be an area they look at, maybe running back as well. I mean, we'll get deeper into that. But back to Dunlap, Pete Carroll says the deal isn't quite done yet, so he can't comment.
You know, the process of finalizing that, I'm sorry to tell you guys, isn't done yet. And until it is, I'm not able to comment on it. So we're going to have to wait. And we'll let you know as soon as we can. I'm sorry. That's why I'm late here. I was trying to wait for it, and it just didn't get done yet.
But you don't have to wait to announce until the COVID and all, he's through all that, do you?
All right. And then one more. Here he is. Here's Pete talking about just the need for outside edge pressure.
It's critical, you know, to develop your rush so they can complement with the rest of the game. To get on the edge and force it and break down the pocket and perhaps, you know, get clean on the edge where you get right in the face of the quarterback. It's huge. And that's nothing new, nothing, you know, that we haven't talked about it forever. But so that element is just it's a built-in need if you're going to have a good, you know, developing pass rush.
Yeah, he's right. I agree. It is a need. It's definitely a need, and it's something they haven't had on any level really this year at all. So it's been problematic. It has allowed every quarterback they've played to flourish against them. We'll see. We'll see if hopefully you can get everybody back healthy. I know everybody keeps bringing up Taylor. I don't expect anything. I really don't. I don't know when we're going to see him. I don't. And when he does get here, what can you realistically and fairly expect from a rookie who hasn't taken a single snap? And maybe he comes in with, I don't know, 6 games left in the season, 7? No,
well, nothing to answer your question, Bob. I mean, he's this year's version of L.J. Collier, isn't he?
But even more so, because he's missing more time. And Collier at least had some training camp.
Well, let's let him get on the field first.
Yeah, I'm just saying, if he gives you anything, it's gravy. I'm not going to be mad if he shows up for 5 games and doesn't have any stats to speak of. I'm not going to go, well, there's a bust.
Well, I'm just saying it in response to what Jim said. I mean, I don't know if he's...
No, me, I think I'm being taken out of context, Dave. I mean, he may be gangbusters down the road, but I don't think down the road is this year.
Yeah, well, maybe not. You know, and that's the thing. I don't ever expect anything from rookies.
Healthy rookies who are there all year.
Yeah. I'll say this, though. I think the way they're playing pass defense, and this is why it hasn't been, like, to me, when I watch the games, is it pass rush? Is that the number one thing? The reason why is because they're playing pretty similar to what they did last year. And having gone through and looked at what happened last year, yeah, they didn't get very many sacks, but there weren't very many opportunities to get sacks because the ball is coming out. And I thought the reason why they would get more sacks this year would be, and they still could, you know, but would be because they're able to play tighter coverage because they got Quentin Dunbar and Jamal Adams in the offseason, and, you know, hopefully other guys will improve. But, you know, it's not so much that those guys are underperforming as it is that they're playing the same type of defense that they did last year. So that's not giving the defensive linemen time to get there. So that to me is what I'm seeing.
Well, Dave, when you said earlier that the style of defense needs to change, what do you want to see?
Well, I'd just like to see them be a little bit more aggressive, you know, as far as, you know, how they play man-to-man, you know, more man-to-man coverage, that kind of stuff. And if you get beat, you get beat. But look, here's what they're doing. This is just me speculating. I'm sitting here on the radio. I'm not in the meeting rooms. And, you know, they have to play to what they think they can get done defensively. And I think maybe they've come to the realization that they need to play that softer type of defense because, you know, they just don't quite have the style or the kind of guys that they can play that. So, you know, I think they're doing the best that they can, that they think they can anyway. So, you know, but still, yeah, I guess to me, I mean, I'm happy to have Carlos Dunlap here and, you know, mainly because he's a good football player. You know, Jimmy mentioned the tips. I mean, the forced fumbles, you know, the sacks. I mean, he's all over the place. And, you know, he's a good pass rusher, 82 and a half sacks. He got into the league in 2010, second round draft choice out of Florida. But, you know, that year, his rookie year, he had 9.5, you know, and then he has a year with 13 and a half. So I just think he believes in himself. So you get him in a place where all of a sudden it's new for him. You know, he goes from being one of the bigger part of their defenses to all of a sudden a guy that's not getting snaps anymore. And I remember him complaining about this weeks ago. We had sound on this. And then he puts his condo up for sale, which seemed like a beautiful place, too.
6,000 square feet or something like that.
Yeah, and there in Cincinnati, check me if I'm wrong, I think you can get Skyline Chili there.
It's a bonus for everybody. Everybody wins.
Yeah.
You get the chili, you get the condo. It's all a big win. But of all the guys we mentioned, was he your number one if they were going to make a move? And I don't think we knew who they were going to target, but we kept throwing out the same names. Griffin was off the market, so he was out. But it was Matthews, it was Kerrigan, it was Dunlap. Trying to think of who else we talked about.
Well, there was some talk about possibly trading for Alden Smith.
Yeah.
And, you know, because the Cowboys are sort of out of it.
I think we're sort of assuming he was available. But guys we knew were available. I was a little bit more intrigued by Kerrigan, and that's not having watched the guy really play. I don't watch Washington games, so I don't really know. But his numbers are ridiculous year in. I mean, he's a double-digit sack guy. Often.
Well, Kerrigan's got 94 career sacks, and Dunlap has 82.5, so... and they're similar in age. I mean, that's the one thing I like about Dunlap too. He's 31, and at that position, you can still get some mileage out of a guy like that for another couple of years. And the contract situation is good too. His money isn't guaranteed next year, so if it doesn't work out this year, you're just on the hook for $4.8 million of it.
Well, and I guess if you're in the NFC East as the Washington football team and the Dallas Cowboys are, you're still in it.
Yeah,
I mean, they all have losing records, and maybe a seven, even a six. You know, game win season is going to get you in the playoffs, but they're not quite giving up there yet.
Yeah, so it's I'm happy they made the move. I'm not if I were going to go, you know, which guy did you want most? Just looking at numbers, and I didn't watch a lot of Cincinnati games. So again, we're just looking at stats. We'll get a much clearer picture of Carlos Dunlap coming up at the bottom of the hour. But if we're just comparing numbers, the guy that stood out to me a little bit more was Kerrigan. But, hey, I'm happy with this move. I like that they made the move. Again, they're attempting. Whether it works or not, we'll see. Right. Maybe it doesn't have any impact, but I'm not going to be mad at John for making the move. I mean, they saw a need. They're addressing it as best as they can with what's available out there and what they have to work with in terms of draft compensation. And they were able to get rid of a salary that they brought onto the books that, frankly, didn't work out at all for him, obviously, in Finney.
Yeah, and they brought in Snacks Harrison as well. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, they're trying. They're trying to get a little bit better on defense. I think they were probably counting on Rasheem Green and CJ LJ Collier, you know, getting better. Green gets hurt. LJ's been up and down, not mostly down. So he hasn't developed into quite the player that they...
Yeah, Irvin gets hurt.
Yeah, Irvin gets hurt. So, yeah, they're making some moves. And, you know, the thing I was talking about yesterday, and it's the thing you always have to consider, is at what cost? Mm-hmm. You know, and so we'll talk to Clayton. I want to say he said there's a couple million in the salary cap that they will verify that with him. But... you know, as far as giving up Finney in the seventh rounder, not going to be too worried about that. Snacks Harrison having to, you know, just sign him for whatever the amount of money it is there. I feel like they haven't been costly moves. You know, it's not like they gave away two first round draft choices like they did with Jamal Adams.
Yeah, you start thinking about all these names now, though, when you talk about Carlos Dunlap coming in and Snacks Harrison, Michael Kendricks, Rasheem Green, Alton Robinson. I think they're going to use him more in the mix. Maybe they'll use Shaquem Griffin more as a pass rusher. We keep wondering about that. So they just, you know, they have some options anyway. And so I'm excited about that. And then, I don't know, you know, off the field, you always appreciate when a guy does good things in the community. And I was looking at the Carlos Dunlap Foundation. He's got an anti-bullying campaign that he takes around to different cities, so that's really cool. He works with underprivileged high school kids to help them get ready for college, and he's also involved with throwing birthday parties for homeless kids who have never had one. So I like seeing that off-the-field stuff with him, too.
Yeah, that's great stuff. Speaks to his character and who he is, and again, we'll get a clearer picture of what was going on in Cincinnati here in just a few moments. You guys can text in throughout the show, 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. You love the move, you hate the move. You know, whether you wanted him to make a move and this wasn't the guy you wanted, I think you got to give him credit for going out there and obviously understanding, hey, we need to do something. We can't just sit on our hands and go, hey, we hope everybody gets healthy and they all improve. I mean, it wasn't working that way. So I like that they're going out there. They're making attempts to make this defense better. We'll see how much of an impact he has. Right now, let's take two.
It's time to take two. Brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at 5.
Take two.
The Dodgers won the World Series with their 3-1 victory over the Rays last night. They took the lead after Rays manager Kevin Cash pulled Blake Snell in the sixth inning.
Yeah, this will be debated for quite some time, and we'll talk about it in more detail later in the show. But I was surprised. I thought they were going to go out and talk to him. I didn't think they were going to pull him, but obviously when the manager comes out, you know, that's a very real possibility. But he was rolling. He was rolling, struck out 9, had given up 1 hit. The top of the order hadn't had a hit off of him, and they were grateful when he got pulled out. They were thankful. So that is a move that is consistent with who the team has been. But, again, we'll talk about it later in more detail. You couldn't help but feel like at the time, not Monday morning quarterback, at the time, what are you doing? What is happening here?
Yeah, it's one of those interesting things about sports that if you do something like that and it doesn't work, then you're a goat. You know, and somebody has to make a decision, and he did, and it's something that they've gone with. So it's very interesting. I whenever these things come up, I always think it's, you know, whether it's 3rd and 2 and you run it and you should have passed it, or you pass it and you should have run it. You know, it's one of those things that he did look really good, but, you know, they were kind of winning with this kind of analysis, you know, the entire year. Do you ditch it? I think it's a very interesting conversation.
No, you're right about that, Dave, and I thought it was really stupid at the time, and then the more I heard people talking about it, that you could argue that the Tampa Bay Rays wouldn't have made it to Game 6 of the World Series without using analytics the way they used them this year. And someone was saying, somebody that texted in, talking about Blake Snell, you know, that his ERA isn't that great, and then going third time through the order. And yet at the same time, you like to think that guys, that managers are going to have gut reaction and just go old school every once in a while. And I would have loved if Lou Piniella had been the manager last night, and if somebody had come up to him with the analytics and said, Mr. Piniella, you know, Blake Snell, after 5 2/3 innings, he's not going to be as good as he was in those first 5 2/3 innings. You know what Lou would have done with that paper? He would have burned it or wadded it up and threw it on the floor. So
first he would have called him sir.
Yeah, it was. And so I just... And, Bob, I'm with you. Even when it happened, I think most people, and, yeah, you're right, Dave, 2020 hindsight for sure, because it didn't work out. But at the time, I think everybody was thinking, what's he doing? What's he doing? Especially when he had struck out Betts, Seager, and Turner 6 times, 2 times each. Yeah. So, and I was even talking to my, you know, for what it's worth, I mean, my kids play baseball, but, you know, I was going to talk to Luke Wilson about it too. But I think if you talk to a player and they say, hey, I'd rather face anybody but Blake Snell right now, when they brought that, the right-hander in, I bet they were thrilled to see him. And, you know, the hell, you know, the heck with third time through the order stuff.
According to Adam Schefter, the NFL is moving forward with plans for a reduced-capacity Super Bowl to be played February 7th, even if the league ultimately adds an 18th week to its regular season. They're planning to keep the stadium at about 20% capacity.
That'll be interesting. It's generally, outside of the Seahawks-Broncos matchup, it's generally a very corporate crowd that's not... It's loud. I mean, you got that many people, they're going to create noise. But that was a different version. I've been to 7 Super Bowls. And that wasn't even close. How loud that game was
in New York.
Yes,
it was
ridiculous. Like a Seahawks home game.
Right.
But generally, it's a very corporate crowd. It's, yeah, there's noise and cheering and all that. But it'll be interesting. 20% capacity. I like they're keeping it on schedule. And we've seen the success of baseball. We've seen the success of NBA basketball and getting through the season, getting through their championship. And there was a lot of doubt about all of it happening, and now it looks like the NFL sticking to their schedule. I like it.
Yeah, 20%. What did we see down in Arizona? Anybody get a percentage count? Because it seemed like,
I don't know,
there were fans in certain areas, and yeah, it seemed like they were just on the sidelines. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the 20%. But you're right. I mean, noise has never really been a factor in the Super Bowl anyway. I'm always curious with these situations. You know, how do they handle who gets to go?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm curious about that, too. And I'm just looking at the capacity for Raymond James Stadium there in Tampa Bay. It's 65,000. So I guess that my math tells me it's going to be 13,000 for the Super Bowl. The one Super Bowl I went to, though, I felt like it was a home field edge for Pittsburgh. You remember all the towels they were waving and everything? Mm-hmm. It sure seemed like there are a lot more Steeler fans there, which is not the case anymore with the 12s and how well they travel.
All right, coming up, we're going to get some background on the Seahawks' new pass rusher, Carlos Dunlap, from Jeff Hobson of Bengals.com. He'll join us next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and More on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Well, the Seahawks go out, get some help for this ailing pass rush in the form of Carlos Dunlap. We get a closer look at him now from somebody who knows a thing or two about him. He writes for Bengals.com. Jeff Hobson is here with us. Jeff, how are you?
Fellas, how you doing?
We're good. We're excited about some help because this pass rush, this defense, as I'm sure you're aware, has been less than good. But tell us about Carlos Dunlap, where he, I mean, what was going on out there? We know he was disgruntled. That was obviously national news, but is he a guy that still has all of his powers, so to speak? Is he on the downside of his career? Where do you see him being?
Well, I think he's a guy that has excelled in one form of a defense. I think he's still 6'6". He's still runs. He can still run. He's very long. He's a good guy. Great in the community. I think he's a guy that will respond to Pete Carroll. It's tough when it's always tough to get sack numbers when maybe you don't always have the lead, although they have had the lead the last month or so, But the Bengals sack pass rush has struggled as well, and I think it's more with Carlos. It was more of a fit more than anything else. They've kind of changed more to a 3-4. I think Carlos is probably a better fit, maybe for what you guys are doing out there, kind of a 4-3, kind of what he was with Zimmer and Paul Gunther.
Hey, Jeff, tell us kind of the history of how this whole thing kind of unwound. Was there any indication of this, like, last year? I know we heard early on in the season that he wasn't happy about his diminished playing time, and then we saw the condo up for sale and everything. Take us through that timeline when it started to unwind for him here, there.
It's hard to tell. It's hard to tell because we don't have access to the room. It's not like the old days when you could had a pretty good feel for what's going on.
Yeah.
Now, I think the only way people try to get a feel is through social media, and that's no good either. So, this is kind of a hard thing to get around. I mean, they kind of switched schemes. Carlos made it known that he wasn't comfortable in it. And I think, his snaps diminished. They're trying to find an identity on defense. They're transitioning from an older group to a younger group, and they're trying to find what fits the new guys best. This is a club that has been the last 3-4 years, they've given up the most yards in the league against the run, and they really emphasized that during the offseason. I mean, they spent about $130 million in free agency to fix their run defense, basically their run defense and their entire defense. And so, they've got DJ Reader on IR, they got Sam Hubbard on IR, they got most of their defensive line on IR, Geno Atkins is banged up with a shoulder. So, they've had to struggle with fits. And in the NFL there's always not one reason for something,
Yeah, you're right about that, Jeff. Now, okay, Dunlap has averaged nearly 9 sacks his last 7 years there in Cincinnati. Would you tend to think that if he comes to this 4-3 defense in Seattle, gets an increased number of snaps, that he could get back up in the 7-8-9 range again at the age of 31?
Yeah, the guy's a great. He's a real physical talent. I think he's the number. You are the back of your baseball card, right? Look at the back of his baseball card. He's got, he's got 82.5 career sacks. So, I would think for a team that needs, help to get some sacks, he's a guy you can turn to. Pete Carroll probably was talking to Carlos today, and he mentioned that Pete Carroll said, I've battled against you before, and Pete probably remembers the October 2015 game here in Cincinnati that the Bengals won in overtime. I think Carlos hit Russ maybe 6 times, had 3 tackles, had a sack and a half. So, I don't know if he's going to do that. That was 5 years ago, but Carlos can be a factor in a game, and it doesn't have to be a sack either. The previous 4 seasons, I think he leads the front 7 with 38 pass deflections. He'll get his hand on the football.
Yeah, and you just touched on what I wanted to ask you, and that is we always talk about extra meeting guys, guys that, you know, the opposition's going to have that extra meeting. How do we slow him down or, you know, something like that? Is he one of those guys maybe in the sense of just he requires a double team? If he's one-on-one, is this guy a problem, or is he a double team guy? How have other teams been treating him?
Well, you know, I mean, it's when you get Geno Atkins around, you know, that's the guy that's usually going to get doubled. But I think it would, I think they're going to have to meet on him because they simply, you know, they haven't seen him in the NFC, NFC West. You know what I mean? They really haven't seen him over there in that conference. So yeah, I think he's the kind of guy that you got to. I'm not sure he's a guy that's going to get double teamed all the time, but he's a guy you got to know where he is just because of his, length and his. His ability to get to the quarterback.
Hey, Jeff, you kind of referenced it a little bit, but as far as the kind of guy that he is, so, you know, we have a guy in here, Jamal Adams, that made a pretty big stink with the Jets and got himself traded here. And so, and he's a great guy, but tell us a little bit more about Carlos, any interaction that you've had with him. His teammates seem to love him. What kind of a guy can we expect in this locker room?
Great guy. I've known him for 10 years. Owns a restaurant in Miami. He wants to get into business after football. Very active in the community. An anti-bullying guy. Got a great program that for kids. Back to school programs. Really terrific in the community. I think he's a I think we've got a good locker room, you know, and I think Seattle probably does too. I think, you know, Pete's got a great culture out there. I think Carlos will fit. Because I think he's like a lot of guys that, you know, sensing the end, you know. I mean, Corey Dillon, the great Seattle native, he wanted a ring before he was done. You know, these guys, they know the time's running out.
Yeah.
They're veterans. They've been around. They've seen it can be taken away from them quickly. And, I think it's a good fit. I think it was a good, works out for both sides. I think probably the Bengals are moving on into a new era. I think Seattle's obviously, they got 7 sacks, right? So,
7-9, something like that. I don't. It's not good, Jeff. Yeah. It's not been good. Yeah. Jeff Hobson.
That's all right. That's all right. You got Russ. Okay.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And by the way, you guys have something very special at the quarterback spot, it looks like, as well. So interested to see how that develops. Jeff Hobson, senior writer for Bengals.com, has been our guest. Jeff, thanks so much for spending a few minutes with us. We appreciate it.
Still looking for that Super Bowl between Russ, the Cincinnati native, and Burrow, the Ohio native. That'll be a... That'd be a good storyline.
There you go.
We're in. We appreciate it, Jeff. Thanks, man.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
There you go. Jeff Hobson, again, senior writer for Bengals.com. Coming up, Seahawks have quite a few key injuries heading into Sunday's matchup with the 49ers. So we'll get the latest from Pete Carroll and discuss our biggest concerns. That is coming up next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
We got the professor, John Clayton, joining us at the top of the hour. Talk some football with him, but a few injuries to be concerned about with this team as they get set for the 49ers this weekend. Pete Carroll addressing some of those. We talked about the running backs yesterday, that basically at this point you've got one running back who's not dealing with any sort of injury that we're aware of, and that's DJ Dallas.
And he's a rookie.
Here's Pete Carroll talking about the running back injury situation.
Carlos with the hamstring is probably, you know, that it's not a major hamstring, so we don't know. It happened during a celebration more than running on the field, and so we're hoping it was a little more crampy than it was a pull. We'll find out here in the next couple days. Homer, he's got a bruised knee that he's already moving way better. He won't practice today, but he's moving way better from yesterday already. And Chris has got a foot, something's going on in his foot that we got to make, you know, see how it goes. We'll be real quiet on Chris until the end of the week and see how he goes on the weekend. So we won't know entirely what's happening until the week is out.
Mm. I'm going to say Chris isn't going to play.
Sounds like
I'm really fingers crossed that Carlos Hyde can play, because what I don't want is Travis Homer and DJ Dallas to be your only options. As much as I am excited to see DJ Dallas get some carries, I don't want to see it put all on either one of those guys or split between the two of them. I'd like to have some experience there.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, the thing is, the offensive line's been good in more ways than just giving Russ protection. I think they've opened up some big holes. So, yeah, you look at the other side, I'm looking at the number of carries for all the guys on the 49ers. I mean, and some of them are, of course, you know, wide receivers and tight ends, but that is a run game where you can just plug a guy in because it's so well executed.
It's like the Broncos years and years ago.
Yeah, it's so well coached. But, you know, they have Mostert, McKinnon, Jeff Wilson Jr., Hasty, and then, you know, that Kyle Juszczyk kid. I mean, they've used him with a quick little handoff to the fullback. But, yeah, the Seahawks, we'll see if they're that kind of a system offense where they can run the ball whoever's in there. I just loved what I saw out of the one carry that I saw from DJ Dallas. But, you know, and then he makes a rookie mistake in the last game. Try not to, you know, paint him with that brush because he is a rookie. It was a pretty confusing deal. But, yeah, it sounds a lot like Chris Carson's just probably going to be a no-go. Homer, though, he's had some times where I mentioned Collins. When Collins was here,
Alex Collins.
Yeah, that he would get the ball, and a lot of times the play would break down. And it seemed like a few times with Travis Homer, he's not very good going laterally, you know, and then putting his foot in the ground and heading upfield. But once you get him going north-south, he looks pretty good, and it sounds like he's going to be fine. But, yeah, I mean, right now, if Carlos Hyde isn't ready, that's what you're going to battle with, those two guys. It's going to be tough.
Yeah, it will be tough, and but I'm hoping like you, Dave. Maybe they can be like San Francisco, and I mean these are guys you barely heard of: Jeff Wilson Jr. and Jamichael Hasty, and they ran for a combined nearly 200 yards there at New England. They've got Tevin Coleman coming back this week, but do you think? I assume they'd go with Travis Homer as the lead back if Carson and Hyde can't play. But do you think there's any chance that DJ Dallas would be out there for the first carry?
I wouldn't think so. I think Travis Homer definitely would be. He's the guy with more experience, and you know everybody's raved about his blitz pickup and you know how good he is with that. So, and I think he can catch the ball out of the backfield. So, yeah, I mean, I would be surprised if they went with DJ Dallas, but you never know. Just because over the last couple of years, for whatever reason, it just seems like the trust in rookies hasn't quite been there, and I don't know if it's because of the rookies that they have, or it's just that Pete is kind of rethinking, kind of changing his policy and how he, you know, thinks about rookies. But yeah, I'm looking like on the practice squad,
they have a running back on
they
the practice
don't.
Squad.
Yeah, there's no running backs here. So I mean that might be something that they want to make a move with, especially if they as the week goes on. If Chris Carson continues, he said we're going to keep him real quiet. I think you can gauge, you know, whether or not he's healthy based on what activity that they have as the week goes on, getting possibly a running back in here.
Well, and with the COVID situation, they need to make a deal or move fairly quickly because they're not going to have them, whoever it is, if they bring somebody in. They can't play this weekend.
Right.
So you want to have them for the following week, depending on how things go with Hyde and Carson and everything. So we'll see what they do there. Here he is with a quick update on Rasheem Green.
He's going to practice this week. He and Phillip Haynes are both coming out on the practice field for the first time in a long time. So we're really excited to get them back out there.
Wow, Phil Haynes. I forgot about him.
Yeah, no kidding.
Hadn't heard his name since the preseason. I forgot all about him. So there you go. We'll see if Rasheem Green can go, and maybe he can help, you know, shore things up a bit on that defensive line. And then Shaquille Griffin still uncertain.
We got to go take him through the week and see how he does. You know, he's in the concussion protocol,
so he's dealing with that. He was also dealing with a hamstring as well.
Yeah,
you know, so
I feel pretty comfortable with Shaquille coming back. You know that you know the whole head injury thing, because it didn't seem like it was that big of a deal at the time. But we'll see. You know, they're pretty careful about that.
But Dave, what do you do then if he can't play? Do you move Dunbar over to his spot and then have Flowers on the right side?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm not sure where why, yeah, you'd probably do that. You'd probably take Dunbar and put him over on the other side and keep everything as simple as you can for Trey Flowers the way he's playing right now. I know that they really like that DJ Reed kid. They've talked quite a bit about him. But, yeah, we'll see.
Who's the other Lyndon Stevens?
Lyndon Stevens was active the other day. I saw him out on the field a couple times, and he actually stood out in camp. But, you know, he wasn't the main story. But I remember thinking, oh, I wonder who this kid is that's probably not going to make this defensive backfield. But he's looked pretty good, too.
And then one more, Pete Carroll, talking about Jamal Adams.
He's going to be practicing in a limited fashion for the first time today. And so we'll see what that means and see how he goes. And tomorrow will be a really important day for him, as will Friday. We're going one day at a time, and we're mixing him in the preparation with the thought that there's a chance. But we're going to just have to wait and see how he does.
I'd say
50-50.
I was just saying that, 50-50, that it sounds like what he said. You know, he'll be limited. We'll see how he looks. You know, obviously it doesn't sound like they're going to push him at all and see how he recovers, how he feels tomorrow, if he can go again. So, yeah, I don't have a strong feeling one way or the other. I think it is 50-50 that he plays.
Well, it's just a tough one. You know, the groin, I mentioned this last week, that it's tough to treat it and that it's we won't go into that. But, yeah, you got to get in a cold tub, basically, and then – you know, the other thing is it's just in your core, and this guy's so active, and, you know, it's like the further away you get from your core, I feel like the better it is, you know, depending on the severity, obviously. But still, that seems like it's – but Ryan Neal's played well in spots, you know.
Yeah,
and
but he's not Jamal.
He's not Jamal. There's no way. But he's done a good job in the run. And then, you know, when you play cover three like they do, you know, he's dropping to an underneath zone like a linebacker, basically. So it's not like you're asking him to cover the deep part of the field unless they play cover two, which they did a little bit in that last game, more than I thought they would. But anyway, it was
– he seems pretty physical for how big – he's not a big guy.
No.
He seems like he's a pretty physical character out there.
Yeah, which I find that he's very responsible. Like on the play where Jordan Brooks made the tackle down on the fourth down stop after the DK Metcalf incident, you know, he came up and took on the tackle. You know, it was a big offensive tackle that was out there trying to block him. So, yeah, he's not afraid of contact, definitely. And you see him, they'll bring him off the edge, kind of like Jamal Adams. But, look, and nobody is. Nobody's Jamal Adams. And Jamal Adams a lot of times will make those plays, make those tackles. And he, Ryan Neal, has just kind of, you know, hit the guy but not brought him down a couple of times. So, but he's playing well, and especially for a guy that you didn't even expect to see out there this year.
All right, coming up, we'll get the professor's take on the Dunlap trade. You guys can text in any questions you've got for John. 710-710 is the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. Talk to the professor next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.